Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission Radio Show. Welcome to Monday. This is a pre-recorded interview for Monday, and as you know, on Mondays, I interview activists and discuss the issues going on in St. Louis, which is really showing us that World War II has never really ended. They brought the war to the United States, and the people of St. Louis are currently living with the radiation that we used against the Japanese people, and on a scale that is incomprehensible. So today I've asked back to join us to talk about the situation in St. Louis and what's going on in terms of fixing it, if it's even possible, is Drew Kuhn from the Missouri Accountability Project. So without further ado, let me introduce you. Thank you, Drew, for joining us.
Hi, Lonnie. Thank you for having me, and thanks for your listeners for hanging out with us today.
Well, thank you for joining us. Yeah, you want to just tell us where you're at and present what you'd like to share?
The EPA had a community dialogue, I guess it was almost 2 weeks ago, two Mondays ago, and there they discussed the four possible alternatives for remediating, for deciding on this. Like, the first one, which they claim that it's not really on the table, it wasn't on the table to discuss, it was just something that they have to do. The first option is do nothing at all.
That's not an option for us. That's an option, do nothing.
Okay. And then the second one is a partial remediation, a partial removal. They weren't really clear on how that process would happen, you know, how they would decide what gets removed, what doesn't. They seem to be for that because it would maybe be cheaper and more time efficient, but we won't really know until their feasibility study comes out, which we're expecting here pretty soon.
Well, you know what? I'll bide my time until you're finished.
Yeah, just real quick. The third option is the 2008 Record of Decision, as it stands now, to cap it and leave it, to build a tarp over it, which the National Remedy Review Board for the EPA Superfund program said that it's not okay. And then the fourth option would be full removal, which is what most, but not everyone at that meeting advocated for. Yeah, so those are four options with this site. To what extent the people actually have a say in that? I mean, just to be quite honest, really none. I mean, it gets decided internally. The EPA is only legally required to gather community input on the matter, but we don't have any final say in the matter, really. So.
Yeah, well, welcome to the United Soviet States of America, right? I mean, that's essentially what it is. I mean, this is the biggest shock, I think, for all of us, especially as we are unpeeling the onion of the nuclear lies, the technology, the criminal cartel that runs the corporations. I mean, if we thought Rockefeller and the oil barons were bad at the beginning of the last century, if we even could even possibly begin to comprehend the harm that these people have done to our planet, the nuclear and the chemical polluters, is incomprehensible.
Yeah.
But this is one of the things I wanted to ask you. In their, would you call this their study, some type of a study, you said, a remedial study, or what'd you call that?
Yeah, so the...
Because you said they're studying option two, right, and they think it's cheaper. But in their... one of the things that is a big bone for me to pick... Whenever any of these government studies happen, they never factor in the human cost, not just in cost of lives lost and death and sorrow and tragedy that it creates. I'm talking about the economic factor. When you think about all the people in St. Louis who are sick or who have not been able to conceive, who have spent hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, keeping their lives alive. You know, all the people engaged. I mean, every family that I've seen on the Facebook page talks about their medications, their illness, their this, their that. Billions of dollars is being poured into their neglect from the nuclear industry.
Yeah, I don't know if we have any exact figures, but the short-sightedness of leaving the waste is the groundwater contamination that's been found by the United States Geological Survey, confirmed by the EPA and designated as an operable unit of the Superfund site, is not taken into consideration for this record of decision, because the record of decision, as they put it, only has to do with the soil.
Right.
Well, you know, I asked them at the meeting, I'm like, well, okay, then unless this radiation just fucking magically appears, in the water, and it's not coming from anywhere but just, you know, some portal into another dimension, like, you're not telling me that there's not radioactive waste in that landfill, and that radioactive waste has been leaching into the groundwater. And if that's the case, and you want to advocate to leave even a little bit of that over generations, that groundwater will travel through the alluvial wells. It will get into the Mississippi, into the Missouri River. It will get into people's drinking water. It will get into the Mississippi. It will get into it keeps going. And
This is the point.
I mean,
it has. I don't mean to be cruel, but
No.
If we even understood, it is there.
But it's through the surface water. Lonnie, let me be clear, because I know it's gotten into...
And you understand water. This is your industry. Let's be clear. I mean, correct? That's what you do for a living. You work with water.
It's what I study. Actually, I got fired from the water job. That's a long story. We bother that off air. But, yeah, this freed up some time. But what I'm saying is, you know, the rainwater runoff of the surface water from either Coldwater Creek or from the landfill, you know, that gets into the surface water of these rivers that people rely on for their drinking water. I'm not saying it's not happening, but to continue to pollute the groundwater, the water that's deep underground, that's just insanity to me, because they're going to come back and it's going to be the same thing. Like, we're going to be back in 8 years to say, or 4 years, however long they drag their feet. And saying, hey,
years.
We got a problem with our groundwater.
We know it's
and,
15
you know,
years. This is what they do. They study something. The EPA studies everything for 15 years. If you look at, go to the EPA website. This is one thing I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
15 years. That's how long it takes them to make a decision. To make a decision. Well, let me ask you this. I'm curious. I'm not going to ask you about the details of your job, but did you get fired for ethical reasons? Because you refused to comply with the lack of ethics? Or you spoke up against something? Okay, good.
Maybe, but that wasn't technically the reason I got fired.
Right. But, I mean, you had been speaking out against practices there, because this is the thing. Our water...
Oh, practices there? No. I mean... It's all interconnected in some ways, but like,
I got fired
because.
Go ahead.
I don't know. To what degree they did or didn't agree with what I spoke up about, to even the degree which they fucking paid attention at all, I have no idea. But I was fired because I didn't respond to a page that was never sent. They had never sent me a page, but apparently a page went out. I didn't respond to it. It was a violation of contract. It was totally inconsequential. Like, no one was out of water. No one was,
You were targeted because of your activism?
I don't know. I can't say that. I don't know.
This is how they work. Exactly right. You don't know. But you know what? Just like we don't know that Hillary Clinton didn't kill Seth Rich. Like, right? But kind of interesting that he was about to give a report on election fraud at the Democratic Convention and was murdered the day before and shot in the back and abandoned. And now it comes out, instead of the Democrats talking about election fraud, they're talking about Julian Assange being a malicious character. It's incomprehensible. What's interesting is there is not a small tide of people who are awake. I think there's a large tide of people, and this is why the propaganda machine is so heavy. And they work really hard at keeping what's going on in St. Louis quiet. You notice that on the news, we never hear a word about nuclear. It's always a mystery cancer, a plume, the radiation plume that was coming across the Pacific Ocean in 2011. They said it would hit by 15. By 2015, we had a blob, a mysterious blob, right? But we never hear the word radiation. So, when you are in these meetings with the EPA, do they talk about radiation openly?
Yeah. I mean, do they talk about the effects of low ionizing radiation, like the health effects of low ionizing radiation?
Yeah, will they discuss any of that? No, they will not, will they?
Their line is, well, this is just it's slightly radioactive barium sulfate that is mixed with clean fill from the slab site that was hauled but not contaminated anywhere else. It was just hauled straight to the landfill, and it was put there in just the few select areas. And, the narrative always changes. Like, it's never about, like, it's never about just the recklessness of digging up radioactive waste from the airport site and leaving it in an unmined landfill. Like, they never, it always seems like they're trying to defend something. Like,
they're trying to defend themselves. They've been ignoring it for 70 years.
No, it's not that bad, but I don't know. I don't buy it.
Yes, it's very bad. I mean, you guys have people dying in St. Louis. Don't they think it? Are you telling me the EPA's position is that the leaking landfill is just not that bad of a deal?
The landfill, yeah. I mean, Kirby Pemberton's daughter, I don't mean to call her out, but Kirby Pemberton is the only person
Who's Kirby Pemberton? Who is that?
Kirby Pemberton is the, quote, 302% increase in rare child brain cancers in the 63031 Bridgeton zip code that was included in the Coldwater Creek study.
Okay.
She lived previously, from what I understand, closer to Coldwater Creek and then moved to Bridgeton, but was included in the survey. And that fact has kind of been misrepresented sometimes. Like, I don't know if anyone has really died as a direct result of the waste that was dumped at Westlake. However, it's the same waste mostly that was at Coldwater Creek, and we do have you know, really good data on that right now. It's just that it hasn't been studied for that long. Like
Drew, can I just stop you here? Because you're starting to sound like the EPA's bullshit. Let's just back up here. You're telling me that you are saying that we don't know if people living next door to the Westlake landfill have died as a result. This is what the EPA is claiming. They're saying that they will not accept the idea that nobody
has
died.
There's been no epidemiological studies is what I'm saying. I'm not saying that I won't accept the idea with evidence presented to me, but, and I'm not saying that it's not possible, but what I'm saying is there's a big gap in time and research that's been done with Westlake as opposed to Coldwater Creek.
Well, isn't that because the people in Coldwater Creek were the people who saw the connection, realized it, and put their pages up? And, like, I think the reason it hasn't, from my understanding, and I'm an outsider, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the reason there hasn't been the epidemiological studies is because there just isn't that the people in Westlake don't have the scientific mind. Like, it just was by coincidence there were some scientific minds living in the Bridgeton area, correct? That basically saw these things, and they decided to create and start making their own statistics. They were thinking like scientists. So it requires a little bit of an effort at the Westlake landfill to get the community to participate. That's the issue, is I think, am I incorrect on that?
No. Sort of.
As an outsider, it seems odd that Westlake and Bridgeton consider themselves two different groups. They're not that far away geographically.
But as a, you're right, they're two. The regions are interconnected. There's no separation there. What's different is the Coldwater Creek Facts Organization, when these, you know, women and other people, they did this statistical analysis, it was offered to the community of Bridgeton and the community around Westlake to be included in that study. That was refused. And Kirby Pinderton was the only one who had offered, and it was kind of late in the game, but her case was from Bridgeton. So, I mean.
So you're telling me the people in Westlake refused to join with Bridgeton? Is that
with the Coldwater Creek study? Correct.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. With the Coldwater Creek, they said no, we want to be separate because they were part of two different agencies. One was EPA and one was the Army Corps of Engineers.
I don't know if that was why, but
okay. Okay, well, that to me would make sense if that would be, that would make the logical sense as to why they're like, no, because it would make it almost impossible, don't you think? But this is the thing, they are really part of one system.
It was a statistical survey, and it was an independent analysis. I don't think it had anything to do with federal oversights, and that I don't know why they chose to not participate, but what I'm saying is that there was a chance to participate at a time.
Okay. So basically, what you're also telling me then is Westlake Landfill really needs to get some epidemiological studies going. Are they conducting them now?
No, the HSBCR has decided not to.
What is the HSBCR?
Center for Disease Control, the Agency for Toxic Substances Disease Registry. Mouthful, but
wait a minute. I'm about to fall off my chair. You were telling me our government agency said we do not need to study the epidemiological considerations around the Westlake landfill where there is a leaking, a burning fuse wrap and nuclear pollution just sitting there in an unlined container. And they don't want to create it. That's incomprehensible. Why? What was their reasoning?
There wasn't enough concentration of the original waste.
Oh, my God.
I couldn't, I couldn't tell you verbatim. I mean, I went to the meeting. I went and sat in that meeting. I don't remember all of their exact reasonings why, but they were like, no, this
is... Did the community put in their objections, and they're like, thank you very much?
Well, of course, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, it means something, but it doesn't legally, procedurally, bureaucratically, it doesn't mean anything. Like, the government doesn't give a fuck about us. Pardon my language.
Yeah, you know what? Yes, we're getting that message that we are. I mean, what does the intro to my show say? We're assets on a balance sheet. We are their little live lab rats, that's for sure. So, Drew, after the show, would you send me that study and send me the contact to those people? Because I would love to have them on the air and talk to them about this. Because essentially what they're saying is that it does not matter. You know, how many tons is at the Westlake landfill? I mean, and they're going to tell us
it's been debated, but roughly, let's call it 50,000 tons.
Right. So you're going to tell me that because it's not part of the 200 or 300,000 tons, 50,000 tons does not create a substantial health risk to the community?
That's what that's what they said at the time.
That was probably appropriate.
I don't agree with it, but...
When did that happen? When did that decision happen?
This was back in 2013 or 14. I think it was like the end of 13, beginning of 14.
Well, why can't the community now, is there any push to go back to these people and say, now we have 2 years more of possible... More, you know, we've got a longer period of time. We want you to rethink this. This is just completely outrageous because the fire has not stopped and we have dead children popping up all over the place here and children with disabilities. It's, off the charts higher than the rest of the country.
Yeah, maybe the liaison that was working with Westlake, her name's Erin Evans. I think her email is erin@cdc.gov, but she got a... She was replaced now. We haven't met her yet, but there's someone else that's taking
right.
up.
Right. Well, that's what they do. They replace them and recycle them through because they don't want them getting too friendly.
Erin is still working with the Coldwater Creek. They are doing an epidemiological study with Coldwater Creek.
That's outrageous. That's outrageous news. That is completely outrageous. Would you send me the contacts for these people that we need to talk to? Because we need to put public pressure on them. That's an outrageous position to be taking. I mean, we have waste from World War II, 50,000 tons. That's 100. I mean, that is just incomprehensible. 100,000 pounds, right? No,
yeah.
More than that. 100,000 pounds of waste sitting there, unlined. It's not like they protected the environment. It's just dumped there, buried there, covered up with grass, and now it's burning. And they're going to tell us there is no health risk. There's not enough of it to cause a health risk study. That's incomprehensible.
There may have been other factors. I don't know. I don't have that right in front of me. It actually hadn't occurred to me in a while until we started talking about it, the epidemiological thing. But I know I'll dig through my files after our interview, but I know I have all the papers that they gave me from that meeting.
Wow. Well, good. But this is the thing. This is the issue. We need to not take their no. We need to be really determined salespeople, advocates on our own behalf.
Yeah.
And this is why, like myself, in regards to St. Louis, I refuse to be shushed away. I'm not going to stop, to be honest. Like, I get it that I'm a West Coaster and I'm not from there. And I'm really, like, to be honest, I'm a hardcore flaming liberal, which probably a lot of people in St. Louis aren't and really don't like. You know what I mean? I get that. But yeah. You know what the reality is? We're talking about humanity here. We're talking about being humane human beings, regardless of your political or religious bent. It doesn't matter whether I'm an atheist, a Jew, or a Christian, or a Muslim. We're talking about humanity and people dying and children getting, you know, young like you, Drew. You are a young man. You have got no clue what has happened to you yet. You won't find out. You won't know till as you live your life.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. These things present themselves while we're living. oops, it's not like we can duck and cover. I mean, in terms of like gun rights, this is an interesting thing because people talk about how dangerous gun rights are and we need to protect our country from gun rights. Well, nobody is talking about Fukushima going on for 2,000 days. And what's going on in St. Louis, 50 years. And how many people has that killed? Far more than get killed with guns every year. Far more. The implications is astounding. So, you know, I don't know. So Drew, what is the plan? What you gave us this summary. These are their four options. You said their inclination is to do the partial cleanup because it's cheaper, which means that's what they're going to do, frankly.
Yeah.
When they say they like something, that's what they're going to do. They're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah. My plan moving forward is to write an open letter to advocate for full removal. I don't know what else I can do.
How many people do you think it would take to sway them?
Oh.
I don't think any.
I don't think it matters.
They're going to do what they're going to do, and what they're going to do is continue to lie and protect the interests of corporations.
Say even just, like a fifth of the population of St. Louis got out in the streets and they were like, nope, not going to happen. You're going to take all that shit out. You know, they call in the National Guard. You know, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, if you're a kid or you're a student or you're an old woman or if you're a fucking Holocaust survivor, they call in the National Guard. They handcuff you. They mace you. Like, there's a war on the people. And it's like, I'm telling you, I kind of feel powerless in this.
But you know what, Drew? This is why I advocate. This is why I am so grateful for my show. Because you know what? They want us to feel powerless. We are not powerless. We need to regain our power and our voice. It's only through us exercising our voice and our courage. Because yes, they're brutal dictators and they are going to try to intimidate us with force. That doesn't mean they can win. We can be stronger standing together, holding each other's hands side by side. They cannot and they will not kill everybody if we stand up together. And that's the point. They want us to sit down and back down. And then we can continue to be their little lab rats. I mean, that's what they want. They want us to be their little lab rats. And you know what? No. I reject their paradigm. You know, even...
My point was that I don't see a change happening from picketing. I see a change happening from picking up a pen and a paper, from writing into, using our voice and
showing up to meetings.
Showing up.
That's what matters. You got to go to these meetings and show up and participate. Go to the EPA and make comments. Let them know, put the pressure on them, because this is their jobs. And this is the thing to remember, they're just ordinary people going to work. And they're doing what their culture has taught them to do.
Yeah, I am mad at them. But at the same time,
I think we need conscientious objectors. Like, I really believe we need conscientious objectors. We need people to say, you know what, I'm not going to go to work and lie about the facts. And I'm not going to allow the meters to be changed by a factor of 10 or by 10 points. Or I refuse to do what my bosses tell me to do. And this is how trade unions got started. I mean, this is why in the 30s, in the last century, in the 20s, I apologize.
Yeah, and people died for trade union. I mean, people were killed.
Yes, and lots of people. Like in Virginia, there was I think thousands of people mowed down. You know, they just said, no, we're not taking it. But you know what? The miners held firm, and they were able to organize, and they did make a difference. And so, you know, it does matter. It really, really does matter because... It's kind of like the Clean Water Act that happened in the 70s. Like, I was talking to someone this morning about Greenpeace. You know, like, Greenpeace's signature movement was to stop the nuclear radiation from being poured directly into the ocean. That was there for the first 15, 20 years. We weren't even told there was nuclear waste, that we had nuclear power. They didn't even tell us. They were just dumping it in the ocean. And then Greenpeace was formed and got wind of it, and they sent their boats out. They stopped it. It was a huge movement. And then something happened, and Greenpeace stopped even looking at nuclear. This is why I was talking about it this morning with Mimi Gurman of No Nukes Northwest. It's like, Greenpeace doesn't even talk about nuclear. We want them to take a no-nuke stance, because especially since the Arctic has melted, we've discovered that Russia... that was their dumping ground for all their nuclear waste. And the reason they can't go drilling in the Arctic is because of all the nuclear waste from Russia is in such precarious positions. They're afraid they're going to cause a nuclear radioactive catastrophe up there if they disturb those billions of barrels they found up there. You know, you think you guys had a lot of waste? Russia was dumping it for 10, 15, 20 years in the tundra up there. Yes. And these are stories that people don't talk about. You know what I mean? They just come and go. That, like, I've read these stories and I've archived them because people, you know, you try to find a lot of these stories and they just disappear. And that's how the oligarchs
are. Found one on Vice is from last year about the Soviet Union dumping nuclear submarines, reactors, and containers into the Arctic Ocean. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, but that was
early '90s.
Yeah, but they did it for a long time. That they had buried it a lot. They found a huge cache of the nuclear barrels at the bottom of the ocean. The Russians were using that as their dump site. So they have thousands and thousands and thousands of casks of waste up there. And this is the worst part. They were fine as long as they were frozen, but they're not frozen anymore. So those.
Well, this is interesting because you mentioned that Greenpeace doesn't take a stance on nuclear, but they quote Greenpeace in this article about the K-159 is at risk of causing environmental catastrophe because of deterioration of the reactor container. Any leak from the K-159 would affect fisheries, both Russia and Norwegian Bomer, and Russians and Norwegians. Bomer said. Bomer's the guy that they quoted.
Yes, but we're not. Greenpeace does not take a anti-nuke stance of saying no nukes. I did get a message once from Greenpeace, though, when I did call them out on this, and they said, "For sure, we are anti-nuclear." But Mimi agrees with me. They need to be. They have been relatively silent about Fukushima and St. Louis, in my view. What is going on in St. Louis is a crime against humanity, in my view. I mean, as an American, I really believe that we have failed St. Louis. Our country is failing St. Louis and the people of St. Louis, and especially the youth. And I find it unconscionable that our country is just willing to turn a blind eye to not just St. Louis, but like Illinois, Apollo, those little towns that were all connected to the Manhattan Project. All of these little towns connected to the Manhattan Project. Everything attached to the Manhattan Project has just been a complete whitewash and a crime against humanity, in my view. And for the American public to take a blind eye to the catastrophic harm. It's not just, oh, some people are going to get sick and cancer and have, you know, we know that for every 2 rads of radiation in the air for a population of 1 million, they know we're going to have 32,000 extra leukemias and cancers. They know we're going to have over 225,000 birth defects. That we know. But we're talking about harm to future generations is unconscionable. We don't even see the negative effects of that radiation for 8 to 10 generations out. The worst of it starts 8 to 10 generations out. So we've got a lot of comeuppance due to us. You know, it's my hat's off to you, Drew, for standing and continuing to take action on this.
Thanks, Bob.
You know, you and I haven't talked about this, and I don't mean to throw you a curveball, so we can pass on this one. But do you know So Much Water, Alex Cohen? Has the Missouri Accountability Project joined forces with them?
Yeah, we were both in Philadelphia together.
Great. So you were on that film that you guys did, the die-in. You guys were part of the die-in?
Which one? In Philadelphia? Yeah.
Awesome. I saw that. So I must have seen you in there somewhere.
I was handing out flyers. We brought a bunch of like stack of like 1,000 flyers.
So out of all those 1,000 flyers, has any of those people who took those flyers contacted you and started to get
Have they
engaged?
contacted me directly through the website? No, but people have contacted me, and at the end of that event, when the park was closing, I kind of stuck around to help clean up stuff and just pick up trash. I did not see one flyer on the ground or in a trash can or crumpled up, or everyone took the flyer with them for whatever that's worth, whether they read it or not, I don't know.
Drew,
But
maybe this is what we should do, and maybe we should put this out on the radio shows while I bring it up publicly. For all those people that are contacting you around the country, we ought to really try to get some type of a public voice going. I mean, if you could have those people, we could do like an interview with them talking to you, or you guys could, we could figure out what actions we could take because the
Well,
country doesn't.
at the time we were asking everyone to call their senators and their congresspeople, particularly the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee, because that's where House Bill 4100 is stuck right now. And at the time, it seemed like it's getting pretty, it was barely on life support, so we were trying to give it a jolt, so to speak. But after all of those calls and all those weeks, I did not see one statement or letter or anything come out of that committee or from any of those respective congresspeople. I followed up, but we don't really have a comment. We
Well,
don't
they're
know. It's
not
not
going to
on
comment.
the schedule.
You know what I think? I think it's going to get passed. See, the thing is, we've already passed the budget for 2017. There's no money for St. Louis in 2017 on the FUSRAP budget. That's already been passed. And I think that's why they didn't want to pass the
This
bill.
wouldn't be fusion. Or, I'm sorry. Yeah, it would. I'm sorry. I thought you said super fun and
No, it's a FUSRAP.
too many
But the.
alphabet numbers. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a soup. But this is the thing. I would be a little bit surprised what knowing how they work in Congress. That bill will probably get passed out of budget in the next year once the EPA says they're going to do a partial removal. They're not going to assume full responsibility because there's just not enough money. They're not going to do a full. There so the, when you consider that our FUSRAP budget 5 years ago, since the Republicans took over, it was at $120 million a year. Imagine that's all it is $120 million a year for FUSRAP. I mean, if I'm incorrect on that, maybe let me take a look. I don't think it's even $1 billion, but it has gone down to 105. It is actually stunning when we consider how little money our country pours into remediation and taking care of the problem that they allow the polluters to use. You know what I mean?
And
Like, the
we
polluters
force
have
them
just a
to.
free hand of it. Very little money. And let's see, what was it? It is going to be. Oh, okay. So this is, let's see. The civil works budget. So I am completely wrong on that one. Let me see what it says. Billion. 4.6 billion, not million. $4.6 billion. The president's budget fiscal year includes 4.6 billion in discretionary funding for civil works of the Army U.S. Corps of Engineers. Let me see. What does it say? The FUSRAP budget expenditures. Formerly, yeah, I'm right. Oh my God, this is stunning. $103 million for formerly utilized site remediation action program. That's FUSRAP, baby. We're only out of all the FUSRAP sites around the country, and there are hundreds, we only have $103 million. Wow. 2.7 billion for operation and maintenance. That means salaries. 1.09 million for construction. $22 million for the Mississippi River and tributaries, $200 million for regulatory programs. I wonder if you guys could get any money from that Mississippi River and tributaries. I wonder, because that's $222 million. $180 million for expenses, $103 million for the fuse wrap, $85 million for investigations, $30 million for flood control and coastal. Do you guys have any of that? Flood control and coastal emergencies? That's for the probably the insurance. $5 million for the Office of Assistant Secretary of the Army Corps of Civil Works. So this is astounding. Don't you think this is astounding, Drew? I mean, I'm actually completely stunned that we have only $103 million. It used to be $120 million when they took over in 2010, and every year the Republicans are cutting it back. Because
yeah, but I want to be clear also, just to not feed into that propaganda that this is going to cost the taxpayers all this money, the principal responsible parties ultimately pay for the work done by FoodStrap. It may not be right away, but they do pay for it, and it's incremental at times, but
say that again.
The principal responsible parties are.
Let's just use Republic Services, for example. Mm-hmm. Republic Services would have to pay for the fuse wrap bill?
For the cleanup, yeah.
But then what's the. Hey.
Hang on, let me hang up on you on the other line.
Okay, good.
All right.
Okay, so here we go. We're recording again, so we'll take a 3-second break and head back in. Do you remember what we were talking about?
Yeah, principal responsible parties and their costs.
Okay, 1, 2. Okay, so we're back. We had a little bit of a snafu on our call, so we had to reconnect again. We have about 15, 18 minutes left on the interview. And Drew, we were talking about responsible parties, right? I'm trying to figure out what you were saying about the fuse wrap budgeting.
So
this $103 million, our government allocates the $103 million, and then the responsible parties pay the government back?
Correct.
That's why it's only $103 million as a way to protect the corporations from having to spend a lot of money.
I never thought about it that way. You know, if the responsible parties are paying them back, why don't they have a blank check?
Right.
You know what
I mean? Why isn't the budget increasing? I mean, why has it been since the Republicans took over the budget? The budget has been decreased every year that the Republicans have been in power. They forced through. And this is what kind of really made me mad about this current budget. Claire McCaskill voted for that budget. She should have just argued and said no. Even it would have passed without her vote. They did not need her vote. She could have just made a complaint. You know what I mean? Like filed a...
Right.
The word escapes me what I'm looking for, a protest vote. You know what I mean? She could have stuck up for the people of Missouri and said, screw you, there's not enough money for our people, there's no money, we have a catastrophe going on, I'm not voting for this budget. And instead, the woman that I helped elect by sending her campaign funds while she was running turned her back on the citizens of St. Louis. And I'm going to, this is why I am a proud Demexit. This is why when the Democratic convention happened, I looked at it and said, oh my God, we have one party and it's the Republicrats, and this is why. So this fuse wrap budget, this is why there's no money. This is the answer. Now that's the missing connecting dot there. Because inside that budget committee, you know, Frank Pallone's wife works with the EPA. She
I don't think she does still
anymore.
She might have.
She worked for them for a long time, and she worked on the committee for women and children. Ironically, you know. So, but really what they're doing is they're protecting the interests of the major corporations by keeping the fuse wrap budget low.
Yeah.
Because there's not enough money, $103 million. I mean, St. Louis alone could use $103 million in 1 year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's outrageous. It's kind of like what happened in where I grew up, you know, in Redondo Beach. I mean, I discovered on the EPA's website that for 15 years, there was a corporation that was dumping chemicals right on the beach. And the EPA's solution? Put rocks on top of it so the ocean won't make it, so it'll protect it from going into the ocean.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
That's what they did. And actually, I got sick. I moved away from California for that reason, because I was like, oh my God, it's just too polluted. Every time I went in the ocean in Redondo Bay, if I even touch the water, my feet itch so badly.
Huh.
You go to Redondo Beach, there's like little flags, swim at your own risk, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's dangerous. We are polluting our entire country. It's beyond comprehension. It's just, you know, and yet Greenpeace makes $33 million a year. Cha-ching, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, Drew. So how do you feel about all this, being such a young man and living in the stew? How does this make you feel?
It makes me feel motivated to do something more to... get the fuck out, basically. Like, I mean, but I don't want to just leave out of fear. I want to leave because I, you know, there's something that, like...
Better.
Something better, yeah.
Yeah, I get you. Well, the thing is, I think you should leave. I'm just going to tell you that straight up. It's dangerous for you to live there. I'm going to tell you what I told Kevin Finnegan. You're welcome to come here. People should leave highly toxic radiated zones. I don't believe we should. If we abandon them, like, I can't understand the people in Flint, Michigan just not exiting, mass exiting, getting in their cars and driving away. I would never live there. I mean, it's beyond common.
Where do you go? I mean, you got to consider a lot of those people in Flint were very poor, poor. But,
it's true.
So... I'm sure many of them would have been too.
Yeah.
But
isn't that the truth? And that is what they count on. They count on the fact that people are too poor to just pick up and leave. You can't have a max exodus. What are you going to do? Just become homeless street people? Even if you have $600-$700, you hit the road with two kids, you're good for 2 days, 3 days. You know,
yeah.
It's outrageous. And I mean, we have a serious crisis in our country, and I have no idea what the answers are. I just know that I want to organize. Like, the people that you gave your flyers out to that met you at the Democratic Convention, those are motivated people. But mm-hmm. I want to turn them into action to get St. Louis, you know, some action. I mean, the President of the United States could actually sign a statement today that says we're going to give emergency funding to St. Louis, with or without the governor calling it a state emergency. The President of the United States pretty much has the power to give money to anybody.
Yeah. President, I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout out about this. The President of the United States also is coming up to make a decision whether or not he will respect the treaties between the federal government and the Sioux Nation, and whether or not the Dakota Access Pipeline will be able to be brought through reservation territory and drilled under the Missouri River. So that's supposed to, there are 60 indigenous First Nations at the Standing Rock Reservation now. Last estimate I heard was roughly 3,000 people. They just had a hearing in D.C. Over the pipeline and to challenge the Army Corps' position on that. And, you know, they have pretty good argument, but we won't know for another month. In the meantime, I wanted to, you know, shout out my love and solidarity and to the all of the people, First Nations peoples and and white folks, plenty of white folks up there too.
I actually feel that most Americans feel that way. I think most Americans stand in solidarity with that part of our nation, the First Nations, the original people who were here. I mean, most Americans, I believe, these days are completely aware that we were sold a bill of goods about who the first people were and what we've done to them. And we really, but, you know, let me ask you this. Do you know what the plan of action is when the government says you lose First Nations? Because generally, the government sides against them 100% of the time.
Most of the time.
So, are we going to be putting our bodies in the street? Is that the bottom line? People are just going to go there en masse and say, hell no, we won't go? I mean, is that really what we got to do? See, that's what I think we need to do all across the nation. You know, in China, they actually stopped a nuclear power plant from being built in one of their provinces. So many people protested. The government backed down. There was hundreds of thousands of people in the streets said, no, we're not having nuclear out here.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we need. But, you know, the Occupy movement did a really good job. The president did a really good job of killing the Occupy movement. He is quite a good servant of Wall Street, in my view.
Could have probably a whole other interview about this, but the FBI actually started Occupy Wall Street. Look up Sabu.
What?
FBI. I'm not messing with you, Arnie. This is real. The FBI slipped an informant. His name was Sabu. He gave the Stratfor keys to Jeremy Hammond, who hacked the Private Intelligence Corporation. At the same time, they started Occupy Wall Street. Sabu was like the main dude that was like, get out in the streets. I mean, they had him on some type of charges, but why would they have started it?
It does make sense. I mean, because they could feel it burbling. They could feel it. Look, Occupy started just about the time Fukushima happened, when we were being told to ignore Fukushima. So you have this big movement of social, we're going to get ourselves, you get everybody all slathered up, and then you come down hard. Look what has happened since Occupy. Everybody that you talk to says, it doesn't matter. We tried it with Occupy, and nothing matters. There's nothing we can do.
It really not just
went back to sleep. They are cowering in the corners. They're not asleep. They're cowards. People do not want to speak out because they are afraid they're going to lose their jobs. They're going to lose their status. Look, Drew, you probably lost your job. It's a very real threat. It sounds to me like you got sabotaged. And that's, you know, when you said it was bullshit at the earlier in the show, it sure did sound like it to me. And it probably has a lot to do with your political activism. This is the ironic part. Protecting our cities and our people and our planet is considered a political position. It's outrageous.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Hey, on the bright side, I got fired just in time to where I could take a week and go to Philadelphia.
Great.
You know, yeah. I found a restaurant job. It's, you know.
Good.
I'm making a week. It's just.
So you're working. So that's good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, congratulations. This is what Americans do, man. We don't let anything stop us. This is why, to me, see, we live in different parts of the country. You've never been here. I've never been there. But as a people, we feel like one people because we have the same core values. Work hard, do good, be good. You know what I mean? That's kind of the basis. Yeah. And right now, we have a government doing exactly the opposite. They're lazy as all get out. And they don't do good, and they are not good. They do bad. They do intentionally bad to see how much they can get away with. It's incomprehensible that Americans, and this whole thing about the Occupy movement, wow, that's kind of a bit of a revelation, I have to say, Drew, for me, that I had never even heard that. That is the first time I'd heard that. So you're telling me that Occupy was kind of a COINTELPRO, like they planted the Occupy movement in the public eye. But how and why did they allow it to grow, and why did they slam it closed so hard?
I figure Because with the 2008 crash, I mean, they knew one way or the other, people were going to be real pissed, and they were going to get out in the streets, and, you know, it could have been a revolution. But if you see a revolution coming, then, you know, if you can create another revolution to subvert that, one that you can more easily control, one that you guide.
Oh, my God. Then, Occupy Wall Street started September 17th, 2011. I know exactly why they did it. If it really was, this is why it's a Fukushima. It's part of the Fukushima cover-up. Because we started to realize by March, April, May that we had massive nuclear meltdowns. Massive nuclear meltdowns going on. And the NRC was desperately trying to keep us from even thinking about it. They fired JASCO. The president came out and said, don't worry about it, everything's fine. So they plant this Occupy Wall Street to, we're going to rectify the country and talk about all the other civil rights. And then you get people slathered up, squash them down. Now what happens when you talk to anybody about Fukushima and coming out in the street about the pollution in St. Louis or in Fukushima? Day 2000 is coming up. I am personally going to create a little protest here in Eugene or in Portland or Astoria. We're trying to figure out where's the best place. There's a small group of us around here in Oregon, and we're going to meet up and we're going to do something either on the 1st, which is day 2000, or the following weekend. Because we must make people remember. But what happens? Yeah. This was very effective. Oh, my God, Drew, this is really astounding. I'm really blown away by this. Wow. Because that's exactly, the Occupy Wall Street movement was created to keep us from thinking about Fukushima. Oh, my God. The collusion, these people, we have, 87 people running most of the decisions on the planet.
Yep.
Dear me. If people even understood how magnificent they are, they would never put up with this. Ever. You know, and this whole movement is about keeping people from understanding how really awesome humanity really is. Because we have such magnificent abilities and capabilities, it's unbelievable. So, Drew, what could we do as we wind up this interview? What could we do out here on the outside? Again, is there anything we can do to organize, to help you? Or what actions would you like our listeners to take to help you and St. Louis?
I would just sit down and take the time and talk with your family, talk with your neighbors, you know, sit down and have a conversation and just, you know, try to spitball or try to, you know, brainstorm ideas, because I think, with whatever your cause, and whatever the thing is you're fighting right now or fighting for or fighting against, you know, creative protests really, like, I think that's the way to inspire people and to get people to remember, you know, whatever it is that you're fighting for or fighting against. Like, I wasn't part of it and I didn't really know about it until, like, it was happening, but a group at the FEPA dialogue, at the very end of the meeting, they silently walked to the middle of the room and died. You know, it was a die-in. I think the time is for us to get clever, to get creative, and try to think of new ways of resistance and disrupting the status quo. And I think that can, you know, that comes through dialogue. So who better to, you know, to talk to than your neighbors, your family, your community, to talk to people.
Drew Kuhn from the Missouri Accountability Project. And Drew, I hope you will come back and share more of your activism with us on the radio show again.
Absolutely. I look forward to it, Lonnie. And thanks again for having me on. Thanks for your listeners for hanging out. And talk to you next time.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Your courage feed on, everybody, and take action and do something.